Welcome to Advice Not Taken with Jamie Kilstein. I'm your host, Jamie Kilstein. I'm a comic. I am good at making mistakes. I'm good at fixing them. And I'm very good at giving advice that I don't take. Today, we have a very special co-host, Tim Kennedy.
I am here. What's up?
We are surrounded by weapons. When I feel like when people...
He's talking about my left and right fist, obviously.
That's it.
And then my left and right elbow.
That's it.
And my headbutt. And my left and right knee.
And those guns.
Yep, they're there. Layered.
We literally... This table is a stereotypical version of what I think people think you are. Where I wrote down in your intro, like, podcaster, author, but I can't not open by saying there is a literal axe. There's a battle axe on the table.
Well, the only reason that battle axe is here is because my wife took it off of the wall that was hanging over my daughter's crib. So that... I'm serious.
No, I know.
Yeah, that was made in Norway, and that scribe right there, my daughter's name is Torin.
Yeah.
Tor.
Yeah.
Like the god of thunder and lightning, like Thor.
Yeah.
And so naturally, she would let me have Mjolnir hanging over the crib,
sure.
Which I tried to do, but right. She said no. And the amount of material that it takes to make Mjolnir. So I compromised, I thought.
Yeah.
Being a good, mature...
husband.
Developed,
yep.
Adaptive partner.
Sure.
So... I had that battle axe hanging over my infant daughter's crib, and she said, she actually didn't say anything. She just took it down.
Right. You come home one day and it's just ominously sitting on the kitchen table. You're like, I'm going to take this to the office.
I'll take it to the office.
Yeah, I get it. And then the samurai sword, I assume, was...
Yep. So there's degrees of them, you know, like you have the $200 samurai sword, and then you have like the $2,000 samurai sword, and then you have the $100,000 samurai sword and above. Like this is in the mid-range of the $5,000 samurai sword. It's from Japan. It's proper. It's hammer forged and
sure.
Folded and all that stuff. But
I love looking at my notes that I'm going to ask you relationship advice while we're surrounded by battle axes and samurai swords. Okay. The first thing I wanted to talk to you specifically about, though, is... So I didn't really know about... I knew about, like, the badass part of your past, right? That you've, like, talked about on podcasts. But until the book, I didn't know what a fucking train wreck you were.
Oh, shit show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And what I'm finding is, as I'm getting my life together and becoming less of a shit show, I'm more drawn... to friendships. Like back in the day, you'd meet comics who were like, yo, we're going to the strip club and doing this. And I'm like, this is my posse. This is what I want. This is the life. And now all I want to do is like babysit for my married couple friends, you know, like those are the people I want to be around. Even when you're telling stories about trying to hang a battle axe above your infant daughter's crib, I'm just like, aw, I bet they had a little cute banter about that. So when was that switch? Because, and this isn't to kiss your ass, like when I hear you talk about your family or talk about teaching people how to protect their families, I'm like, well, that's the kind of guy I want to be. And you almost sound like a version of who I was. And especially for people listening who are maybe in the middle, what does that transition look like? Is it a rock bottom? Is it gradually trying to better yourself? Is it a combination?
Yeah, I mean, there's no switch. There's no moment. There's no, like, Superman walked into the phone booth
yes.
and I tore my shirt open and all of a sudden I flew away to be this miraculously
yeah,
kind of person.
Yeah, you just fly to church suddenly.
Yeah. like, even though religion and did play a part in it, it has been and is an ongoing, deliberate, intentional decision. Like, how quickly do you think, like, you know me pretty well, how fast could I de-evolve to the violent orgy swinging crazy maniac that I was but a few years ago,
right?
Like in a heartbeat, right?
Sure.
But instead there's an intentionality of making small little decisions that collectively, like aggregate, this combined, accumulated, when you start lining them all up, they start having this better and better impact.
Yeah, it's so funny that the quick switch only happens in the negative, where you're not like out doing drugs with your friends and suddenly just like, bro, I got to go to Bed Bath and Beyond.
Yeah.
Like it feels like to move towards that positive side, it's small incremental disciplined steps, but to derail, it's just
it's hard work, consistency, and over time.
Yeah,
like that's the thing to see positive impact and to see positive change. Like I argue that I and the guys and gals I get to work with, that we collectively maybe are doing more good than if you grabbed any other, 50 dudes on the planet, like if you pulled back some layers and you got rid of some smokes and mirrors and you really saw what we did or are doing in Ukraine, what we did in Afghanistan, what we're doing on the border, but the humanitarian side, training civilians, training law enforcement, like when you start putting, like running a school, like when you start putting it all together, you're like, what is going, like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
And it is lots of little decisions that we are making consciously, intentionally, so that we can have more volume to do work.
Yeah.
And that volume of work is like so fulfilling.
Yeah. I mean, I think our mutual friend Dan from Drinking Bros, and he talks about this on his new podcast on Citizen, about even little things like you walk by and you see trash. Am I going to pick it up? By ignoring it, that's one point in the negative column of are you going to start getting your shit together? Whereas if you start just training yourself to do those little things, that's kind of the first step.
Yeah. You know, just to make it super simple, in a day, when you wake up in the morning, do I make my bed?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You make your bed. And then I get out. Do I have some sugary cereal or do I make some eggs?
Right.
Do I drink water or do I go have a Starbucks latte?
Right.
And every single one of the, like, they're so, I know this sounds cliche, each and every one of those individual decisions by themselves are almost meaningless.
Yeah.
But when you start putting them together, you see this tidal wave of positive effect. And this J curve, it's like exponential. Like I did the right thing, and then I did the second right thing, and then I did the fourth right thing, then the eighth right thing. And they're like, by 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm already 200 emails in, 6 phone calls in. I've already taken my kids to school. I already made my kids breakfast.
Right.
I tried to get my wife to stay back for a few extra minutes after the kids went to school so we could have rad time. It just keeps getting radder.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, and I think what people don't understand is when they hear shit like make your bed or don't drink, they think it's just because of the consequences of, oh yeah, I know alcohol's bad for me, sugar, cereal's bad for me, I'll feel better if I don't do it. And it is that, but it's also, and this has really helped me with my depression, and even I would say as far as when I was suicidal, it's mini wins throughout the day. So not only is it you're getting the benefits of, let's say, not drinking, or you like, oh, okay, you get to come home and your bed looks nice. It's not just about that. It's literally just about picking up win after win after win. Yeah. And if you can do those little things all day, you go, all right, well, I guess I can probably cut back on drinking. Then you do that. Then you get positive affirmation for that. And you go, well, I feel better, so I guess I can go to the gym. Then you start going to the gym. Jesus, I'm knocking over ammo. And I think it's almost more about that.
Yeah. You're so brilliant. You're so right there. And you apply that to anything. Let's talk grappling and fighting.
Yes.
You look at Gordon at ADCC or Giancarlo Bidoni. You saw lots of little wins. You saw an angle. You saw a position. Yep. You saw a timing. You saw a body lock. You saw a single leg that then actually was able to be executed. It wasn't executed because he just did this great single leg.
Yep.
It's because he won 6 consecutive battles that leading up to it, and the momentum made it very easy for him to be able to finish. Yeah. Then get a back take. And then he like sits on the back for it didn't just happen.
Right.
Right. There's not a Superman moment.
Well, and
there are lots of little battles.
Yes, and I can make a white belt version of that, which is whenever I coach beginners, I always tell, and they're just fucking freaking out, and someone's on top of them and they're losing their mind. And let's say someone goes to armbar them, right? In their head, you watch them and they're trying to pull their entire body out. And you have to explain to them, hey man, you're going to lose this battle while you're getting good, right? You shouldn't think about, I have to get my arm out and then I have to get off him and then I have to, pass his guard and then I have to tap him out and then I have to get my black belt and then I have to, go home and tell my wife. You just need to go, what is in danger right now? My elbow. I'm going to get my elbow out. And then you go, oh, okay, my elbow's out. Now maybe I'll try to pass. Oh, I get caught. Okay, now I go back. Now I get my elbow out. Now, it's taking these little victories where I think, especially guys, people will show up at jiu-jitsu and kind of assume they have to be good and beating people up. And it's like, no, man, it's these little fucking steps of progress while getting your ass beat that makes you better.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are such long-lasting benefits. I mean, in the holistic total life human optimization sense, like how fulfilling it is for when you get all these little battles, when you're not drinking, when you're sleeping well, you know, like you could take any one individual decision, like making your bed.
Yeah.
That started a cascade of great decisions that then climaxed with me coming home at the end of the day. I've already put the babies to bed. I've already cooked dinner for the kids.
Right.
Made dinner for the wife, have a glass of wine. I can do that.
Right.
I have the time to do that.
Yeah.
And even better, we walk then into the bedroom and the fucking bed's made.
Right.
The candles are lit.
Right.
Like, you know what's happening.
Yes.
The woman's going to be like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm in to win it.
Oh, I thought you were setting up so you could hang the battle axe up in a romantic. But yeah, man, like it really is.
But it started with the little thing.
And by the way, people don't understand this. When you are depressed, and this happens to me, when I get anxiety, I feel like I have no time to do anything. There are days where I have to trick myself to train by telling myself I'm not going to train. So I feel like I have more time and then I just go train. Right. And that day you were describing, which is filled with more tasks, you actually, when you realize it's time for that glass of wine, you suddenly you're almost shocked by the amount of space you have because you accomplished so much during the day. And my theory is what happens is when you are depressed, when you're feeling like I don't have time to do anything, what you end up doing is you just sit there and you panic and you start scrolling on your phone or you're eating shitty food to treat yourself. And that's all of your time, where when you are riding that high of win after win after win after win, even though you're doing more that you thought you didn't have time for, you actually have an infinite more amount of time because there's not that bullshit, just depressed, sitting around, feeling sorry for yourself, scrolling through the TV or phone.
Yep. And everything's more fulfilling because the things that you're doing have meaning.
Yep.
And the things that you are spending your time on have a positive reward.
Yeah.
And you know, it sounds like we're talking from this point of elitist, which couldn't be further from the truth because both of us have lived in the most darkest moments of our lives.
Yep.
You know, naked swims into the ocean with no purpose of coming back.
Yep.
So, but I know the consequence of not making these little decisions. It seems so insurmountable when you're looking at a totality of a day and be like, man, I can't do all these things right.
Yep.
You don't have to.
Right.
The way that you eat an elephant is by taking the first bite.
Right.
Right. And then another bite. And
did that's, not see that analogy coming, but yes.
And when you look at an elephant, there's like, no way can I do this.
Right. 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 Right.
I only have to take one bite and then I'm going to walk into the village because I have some nutrients, some protein in me. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to have a great day because I'm in a good mood because I just was on this beautiful hunt in the African grasslands.
Right.
And then I found 15 friends because I'm in a great mood and they're going to come out here and we're going to have this fantastic barbecue.
Yeah.
And then everything just keeps getting better.
Well, and
but
also,
it all started with this little thing.
I also just realized that because I'm thinking about people listening to the show who are struggling with depression, which I assume is everybody. And if I was 18 and I was like, hey, I'm depressed, and they were like, make your bed, I'd be like, go fuck yourself. But I feel like people listening to that, isn't that more tangible than get better?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because sometimes when I get the most depressed, when I get from I'm sad to, oh, fuck, it's happening, I'm in that dark place, it's usually when I get depressed about being depressed. And what I mean by that is something is happening that has the right to give me anxiety or depression or whatever. And if I realize what's happening and just deal with it, I'm fine. But if I start going, fuck, this is never going to end, this is my fault, I'm such a fuck up, I'm so broken, this always happens to me, and you start telling those stories, that's when it compounds and gets really, really bad. That is impossible to deal with. But the times I start to feel like that, and I'll text a friend, and they're like, dude, come in and train.
Yeah.
And then I go in and train, and just that one sense of accomplishment. So I do think that is valuable advice for anyone who, even if they feel at the darkest of darkest of darkest, don't even think about, like, go do something else.
Yeah.
Accomplish going to the gym. Accomplish saying no to drinking, which is going to make you feel even worse the next day. Make the bed. Like, little things like that. And I legitimately think those little decisions can pull you out of the much darker holes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really hard to get in a dark hole. You know, you know who's in this office.
Yeah.
You're like, I walk in here with my shoulders down for a moment, I will have six dudes descending on me.
Right.
You know, like a clan of hyenas. And it's a wonderful thing to have a tribe, to have a community, that grappling community, boxing community, church community, like whatever that is. So like, you never have to make these decisions alone, and you never have to fight in these dark moments by yourself.
What do these guys, because I, you know, my listeners now, we're a spectrum. It's all over the place politically and stuff like that. But I've never had friends like you until I moved to Texas. And so I didn't have a ton of community. I had a lot of people who, when you could get them, things would be around. Mm. And but other than that, not really, right? Yeah. Maybe they'll shoot you a retweet. But I never had like dudes being like, you need a place to stay? You need someone to drive you to the gym? I'm going to pick you up because I know you're not going to train, and we're going to drive to the fucking gym together. What do guys like this look like when they do descend, when sad Tim walks in here?
Graceful.
So they're not just like, because I think the stereotype would be like, come on, pussy, stop being a fucking girl with your feelings. And then you guys go punch walls and throw axes and shit.
I think the most surprising thing that when anybody spends any amount of time with me or any of these men and women is the common characteristic is grace.
I like them.
They have done horrible things. Most of them have murdered their entire adult lives.
Yeah.
They've been at war for 20 years. Yeah. They've been in the military for 20 years in the special operations. Like, if they haven't been doing this thing, then they're probably not very good at their job. And they would have gotten out a while ago.
If they haven't murdered, they are bad at their jobs. Yeah. Got it?
But they have also lived on this crazy spectrum that is indescribable, from, you know, chaos, anarchy, murder, hell, the things that exist in war, to the elation of coming home and smelling your wife's freshly washed hair for the first time in 12 months.
Right.
The spectrum that exists in that emotion, all the mistakes that you make in between there, you know, the infidelity and the horrible decisions that you make while overseas. And because of that, there is this humility and this grace where it's just like, Matt, that first, he's a 250-pound, you know, special forces sergeant major.
Yeah.
And that hug, or his, hey, man, I'm just checking in on you.
Right.
He's like, come on.
Well, and
you're so amazing.
You know what?
How are you so great?
Yeah. And I will say to the people listening who haven't experienced that, which is, if you're in that low moment, even if you're not in the military, but if you're in that low moment, you just described those low moments as much of a superpower as the badass things people can do, which means that if you are struggling right now, if you have done something shit, you know, when I talked about this on the first episode, but I had an affair 10 years ago and it blew up in my face because I was this like liberal feminist dude and they were like, ha, we gotcha. Mm-hmm. Right. And I hated myself for it for so long. And of all people, Bert Kreischer on his podcast was like, you're going to look back and this is going to be a gift. And I said, no, it's not. No, it's not. And it does take a while to stop fucking hating yourself, but I do not think I would be as kind if I didn't have such a fucking fall.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to think I would be, but I wasn't back then.
Yeah.
I was fine. I was trying.
I don't know if you can have grace unless you've fallen from grace.
Right.
Because, like, you don't know the sting of pain unless you've felt. You can't be empathetic and sympathetic to somebody that is experiencing these low moments unless you yourself have felt the sting and pain of being in those low moments.
Well, and then the gratitude of when things start to get back to normal, where you go, oh, I have a one bedroom apartment again. You know what I mean? And suddenly, because I remember before the affair was the most money I ever had, and the dumb shit I used to buy or the things that brought me no joy. I was just trying to project happiness into the world out to be like, look, I have a Pac-Man machine, even though like I never played it, because I was like, this is what someone my age who's getting famous has, right?
Yeah.
And I was fucking miserable. Whereas now, dude, a walk without my phone. I am looking at the sky. I am thanking God. Like, that's what I did this morning.
Yeah.
And it's everything, because you know what it's like to fuck up, hold yourself accountable, get better. And then you look back at that and you go, man, I'm glad I'm the person I am now. But I think the people who are going through it, they feel like they're not, you can't, it's so hard to see ahead and be like, hey man, everyone listening to the show right now, if you want those horrible feelings you have, that can be your fucking origin story for when you turned it around. And then you can get to the point where the littlest things are making you happy, or you can console a friend with a big like Matt hug and shit like that.
Yeah. I also hate vanilla people.
I love that.
I have a real hard time finding any common ground with somebody that has usually in a curated, fake, editorialized way been on this moral high ground their whole life.
The Happy Monday people.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I love me some range.
Yeah, dude.
You know, I love me some darkness.
Oh, you go to an AA meeting? Some of the funniest motherfuckers,
dude,
I've
hilarious.
Ever...
Hilarious. Yeah. And the sweetest.
Yes.
You know, and some of the most successful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they picked them. This idea that... You know, I don't like that the cancel culture argument is either people on the left who pretend it doesn't exist or people on the right who are like, why can't I say the N-word? Like, the what everybody on both sides should be saying is like, we should be rooting for redemption.
Yeah.
We should be rooting for redemption.
But they want an I got you moment.
That's it.
Instead, I'm like, give me character.
Dude, and what's so crazy as someone who used to be like an atheist, super lefty, is I have found that so much more from the right and from religious people, which I always thought the opposite, because I grew up, my idea of a religious person was George Bush.
Oh, God.
And no matter how good your, no matter how good your band is, if the one fan screaming about the band is George Bush, you're gonna be like, I'm not listening to that band. I'm not gonna listen to that band. And then when you meet these like, the great religious people, they were like, hey man, you know, Jesus' whole thing was forgiveness, right? And you go, oh. And they're like, yeah, that's why he did the dying thing.
Yeah.
And that's why you're eternally loved. And you're like, I'm what? Like, why haven't I been around this? This sounds fucking incredible. But, you know, and I say that, one, to give props to those people, but two, to be like, that's an entire community that I just completely judged, mischaracterized, and those people do exist. There are shitty people on the right, on the left, Christians, atheists, whatever, and there are great people on those sides. But to, at 40 years old, realize that the side that I completely demonized are the ones who are like, no, man, like, we forgive you and we want to help you, like, get better. And, you know,
It's stereotyping. It rarely works well, you know, and demonizing entire groups of people is usually a pretty good way to be wrong, about your, whatever opinion you have about them.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been in the humanitarian space for the first time in my life. I've worked with them like a degree removed in the military, you know, working with Doctors Without Borders or, you know, the Samaritan's Purse. And there's a lot of great organizations, but now working with Save Our Allies, we're like at the forefront of the humanitarian space.
Right.
And some of the groups that me as a military guy, and I'll use the Doctors Without Borders, where I'd be like, man, these far left, you know, hippie doctors, but man, their hearts are the most beautiful thing, you know, and
that's why I was attracted to the left is that bleeding heart stuff that'll get made fun of. I'm calling myself a bleeding heart centrist because I still have that. And I don't want that to go away.
Yeah.
I don't want the vulnerable shit to go away. Like, even if I become more center, more conservative. Yeah. And for you, just like for me, as I'm sure I have to like white knuckle it for some of the conservative stuff for my conservative friends, I'm sure when one of the doctors is like, these are my pronouns, and you're like, you just have to remind yourself, like, they're helping people. They're great people. And it's just something new.
Yeah.
But also how fucking beautiful. I tell people this who start screaming at the other side, or they get mad at me for going on a right-wing show or whatever, is I go, don't you want to live in a way, you know, if I say, hey, Glenn Beck's really nice, and they're like, fuck you, blah, blah, blah. And I go, hey.
He's really nice.
He's so nice.
Yeah.
I go, and he's authentic.
Yeah.
Like, it's all genuine. And I go, would you rather, if you really care about your issues, isn't that good news that I'm telling you, hey, there's someone on the other side and they're actually really sweet and compassionate and you could actually find a lot of gray area or middle ground with them? Because I have.
Yeah.
And it's, they don't want that. They just want to fight on Twitter because that's what brings in the money.
It's so weird and so tragic and so pathetic. The, you know, discourse, a thing that was so celebrated mm-hmm. in our culture. Like it was one of the most celebrated things all the way back to our founding fathers was, okay, we're going to have the reason we're writing this beautiful constitution the way that we're writing it is to enhance the ability for opposing ideas to come into one town square and for discourse to occur. So the better idea, the cream of the crop, will be risen.
Sounds solid.
So simple.
Yeah.
And we are currently living in a world, in an era where via tech and the echo chambers and the silos that we are self-selecting.
Yes.
You know, like I don't want to follow this person because they disagree with me fundamentally, or I only will follow this person because they are going to echo back to me my own opinions
yep.
that are going to further solidify the opinions that I have that aren't actually based in anything because that opinion has never felt conflict before.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's a really true idea.
Right.
And this, our ability just to sit across from somebody that disagrees with us and have a conversation is so woefully missing.
Dude, I've talked about this where one of the reasons that I'm becoming, you know, if you were to become more liberal or start going on liberal shows, so let's say promote your book, or when I go on conservative shows, the very Twitter people, they have a term that they use, which is grifter. Now, grifters exist, right? I had a chance to be a grifter where if you just suddenly change all your views because you got a book deal and you're writing about it, you go, all right, that's a little suspect, right? But one of the reasons that some of my views have changed have just been because for the first time in my life, I'm around conservatives that I really like. And I go, hey, man, if I like the way you treat people and what you stand for just as like a dude, can I ask you why you believe this like tax thing?
Yeah.
Because now you have credibility to me as a man, right? So then I go, all right, well, even if we disagree, we are kind of trying to do the same thing. You think that'll help people. I think that'll help people. Whereas I think most people online, they think you want to destroy people, whether that's, you know, on the left or on the right. And you know, I told a story about you on Glenn Beck. I'll tell the full confessional story that I never told you, that I never told anybody, actually. I have probably followed and unfollowed you 3 times on Instagram. And this is before we knew each other.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm in Austin. Tim and I have a bunch of mutual friends. I'm going to follow Tim. I think I probably heard you on like Rogan. I heard an interview where I'm like, he sounds like a cool guy. And then I followed you. And this is a while ago. And then I saw some like conservative meme some shit.
Yep.
And I was like, not for me. And I did exactly what you just said. I go, well, he doesn't agree with me.
Yeah.
Right. I probably followed you because I was just like, I got to train harder. And then suddenly I saw some fucking, you know, whatever. and then I was like, no. And I unfollowed. And then I probably heard you on some other fucking podcast. And I was like, all right, let's give this another shot. And then followed you. And then, you know, something about like, you know, we got to give teachers axes. And I'm like, oh, we're going to unfollow you. and then we met. And I did Sheepdog, and you said to me, and this I hope you don't mind. I've said this on like 3 different very large podcasts, but I think it's important for people to know. So I assume you are just as, and I don't want to say conservative as a derogatory term, but like as far right, as far away from me as possible. Just one of those like nutty right wing people, because everyone looks nutty online, right?
Yeah.
And I did your Sheepdog course. You invited me, which was incredible. And it was, you know, the first time I shot a gun and was around people like you. And also it was the first time I kind of felt, you know, rolling with some of the instructors and having people ask me questions. I was like, oh, I'm actually, because I got masculinity issues where I'm like, I'm actually like, I belong here.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of people probably attack people like you because it's scary. And they go, well, that I'm not that. Right. So a lot of people on the left do that. And you said something to me, and I don't know if you remember this, but I go, hey man, don't worry. Like I'm going to promote, you know, I really appreciate you letting me come for free. I'm going to, you know, promote it. And you go, I don't need you to promote it. We're sold out for however long. And I go, oh, well, you know, I mean, my audience is kind of different. You know, it's a lot of like liberal people. And you lit up and you told me, you go, promote it. We even did like a comedy sketch. You're like, please promote it, because you were like, I don't want you said some funny version of like, I don't want it looking like a fucking white guy militia. You know what I mean? You're like, I want to train, because what if for anyone who doesn't know, Sheepdog Response, it trains people how to defend themselves in situational awareness, firearms, grappling with weapons, and medical. And you go, I want Muslims, Jews, LGBT people. I didn't even know you knew that LGBT was an acronym, Tim. You were like, I want women here. And in that moment, it was such a heavy moment for me, because not only was I wrong and I was like, you're not who I expected you to be, but then I got kind of pissed off because I was like, and you're doing more than a lot of my old liberal Twitter friends would do. Whereas if they walked by a gay person getting bullied, they may tweet about it, but are they going to go hands-on, which you would, right?
In a heartbeat, of course
you would. You wouldn't be like, my guy probably voted for Biden because he has blue hair. If you see someone in trouble, like, you're going in. And, dude, so many emotions where it's like, one, I want to be like you. So that was huge. Two, fuck, man. So many people who announce how righteous they are aren't. And then three, I completely judged you wrong, and in fact you're doing more. Like, it was such a big moment, man.
Yeah, there's in the military, if you walk out there and went to Carl's office and you say, hey, what's the fight that we train for? And Carl would say, we train for the fight that we're probably gonna fight. We don't train for the fight that we're gonna want to fight. Now, in my lifetime, you can imagine the fights that I want to be in, right? Like, I want to be at Uvalde at the school when that kid walks in.
What you just said is so important. I'm very new to going to church, but I've made friends with a lot of people already because that's what I do. And I was talking to my church buddy who works there. And we're actually going to go out tomorrow because he used to be like, you know, he was a punk rocker too. And he knows all the weird shit I'm going through right now, like internally. And I go, you know, man, I love everyone is so kind here. And I want to emulate that. And what I read about Jesus, I go, I want to emulate that. But I'm certainly nowhere near a point where I'm like, the solution is just tell people about Jesus. I mean, one, I just don't know enough, right? But two, I'm like, what's actionable in this moment to help people? And he was like, dude, that's what it's about. It's about just being a good person and then letting them come to you. So when you said that you do that at church, when you said that when you told me all the things you told me, it's like you weren't telling me, you weren't on Twitter screaming at me to be less liberal. You weren't being performative. I just get you when you act, and this is everyone listening, when you just do the right thing. It's another cliche that the actions speak louder than words.
Yeah.
If you really want to get someone to be more to your political leaning, if you want to get someone to vote Democrat, don't scream at all of your friends you went to high school with on Facebook. Be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Be fucking undeniably awesome. Post stuff about you helping tribes overseas or being in the Peace Corps. Show the dog you're fostering, right? Because the dog was abused and no one else would take. You show people that you're fucking awesome. And then I go, and then he posts a thing where it's like, this is who I'm voting for. I'm going to go, oh, I want to know who that guy's voting for. Because I got fucking rules. Instead of just screaming, which is what we do.
Kindness and grace are like, one, I'm not sure if it exists online anymore.
I don't think it does.
Yeah. It can with little decisions.
Yep.
I have a hard no negative interaction with anybody ever on any digital thing for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah,
there's no point to it.
That's huge.
And and some people say some really hateful, nasty, unfounded, and factually inaccurate things towards me all the time. I still won't spend one moment of sending anything negative back their direction. Yeah. Instead, I look for any reason to compliment that person. I look for any reason to show that person kindness. I look for any reason to find common ground, to bring them to a discussion, to a table. And
that's huge, man, because like, especially when you said factually inaccurate, Tim, you triggered me. When people, you know, call me a fucking cuck, that's hilarious. The word's very funny. But when people can just say stuff that's not true, there's part of you that just goes, well, we should be able to fight, right? Like, you can't say that. And it's like, well, they can. But that's the thing where you're like, how does this exist? And that takes a lot.
Yeah.
Not to start fucking presenting your pinpoint or your PowerPoint of like why they're wrong. And the amount of time that any thought towards someone negative, it's just such a waste, man. Especially because, you know, that's probably one of the reasons you can get away with doing so much of the good shit you do is because you're not involved. And same with if people have toxic people in their life.
Yeah.
You're allowed to cut them out.
Yeah, you are.
You know,
you don't need them.
No, you do your best. You try to help.
Yeah.
And then if all they bring is negativity, like, I don't think it's a bad thing to be able to walk
negativity
away.
And hate are two things I know for a fact destroy the vessel they're carried in.
Yeah.
So there's just no point in you having it in you.
Yeah.
Like, get it out. Like, I have plenty of violence. I have plenty of time to go overseas and do deadly deeds.
Yep.
When they have to be done. But there's no reason for me to carry ever a moment of negative hate towards anybody or anything.
There's a Buddhism saying that something like when it comes to jealousy or whatever, that it's just like poisoning your drink.
Yeah.
Like, you're not doing anything to them.
No.
You're just fucking
ruining yours.
Destroying yourself. Yeah. So with everything you were talking about, we're going to kind of break format from the show because usually we have a section where we give like celebrities advice and like I have that stuff, but I think this conversation is really important. And this is kind of circling back to the very beginning, but it encompasses everything, which is once you start hitting those victories, right? Making the bed, a wife who loves you, doing the right thing and being financially compensated for it. So you're making an okay living now. You know, you quit drinking, so I'm starting to get in shape, or you're going to the gym and you're starting to look better and be confident. I feel like once those little victories come, then it's pretty easy to stay on track. You know, that's why the first week of a diet sucks, because day four and you're fucking miserable because you're sugar withdrawing. And you look at yourself and you're like, I look the same. And you don't realize it takes a while. But once you start like looking good, it's going to be harder to go back because you feel good. And I feel like it's the same with talking shit on the internet. It's the same with listening to people who disagree with you. It's the same with all those things. It takes little steps. Then positive things happen. You're rewarded. You keep doing it. More positive things happen. It gets easier and easier. You know, you have a family. You have kids. You have this like amazing place you've built. The idea of you derailing now would be pretty fucking insane, right?
But you could do it in a heartbeat.
You could do it. And people do do it.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of times, though, the people who do it, like they weren't working on themselves. They maybe just acquired the things, right? They got a hot wife and they were like, yeah, fuck yeah, I did. Or they got a good job because they were cheating their way to the top. Yeah. Or
I could go to Rosé Hour on Thursday night, or I could go to Happy Hour on Friday night, you know, like, and how fast could I, boom, make the mistake?
Right.
And
yeah, well, you get cocky, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, I can get away with this. But what is... I'm looking for your, like, whatever the opposite of rock bottom is, your romantic bottom, your romantic, that sounds like a gay thing. Before the good things happen.
Yeah.
When you go, whew, so many people, especially my old fans, will probably get mad, but like mine probably happened when I decided to move back to Austin. And the only reason was because of friendships that I have here. And there wasn't a money plan. And then I got here and then I went to church with my friend. And then I was like, whoa, there's a lot of cooler stuff that I could be doing that's kind of like beyond me. And then the next week, when a girl who I really like she's a friend of mine, wanted to hook up, but it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't go towards a relationship or go towards having kids, which fucking again from out of nowhere, I'm like, I think I want kids. Kids, by the way, it was because I saw this dad boxing with his like 4-year-old daughter, and she was this fucking killer, and I was like, I want a fucking jiu-jitsu daughter. But all these things sort of, I guess that was my sort of, it started to change where, yeah, when the girl wanted to hook up, I just very nicely was like, hey, I'm just not looking for anything like that. And it was easy for me to say no, but only because I have these higher aspirations now, which I just feel like that would be, it would just be distracting. Wouldn't necessarily be bad. It would just be distracting. For you, when was that? Like, when were you suddenly like, yeah, when did it go from orgy to like, I want a wife or I want kids, or you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or just you're sick of the other shit.
Yeah. there's not like this moment. What there was like these multiple failures and a trajectory, clear as day. You could, you know, write it on that dry erase board behind you. You know, you could just see this perfect azimuth of where my life was heading by the decisions and the failures that I was making. You know, where I have multiple women pregnant. I think that I have AIDS. You know, like all, you know, fast forward a year and a half where I'm now on a special forces ODA and I'm being this selfish, egotistical narcissist to my team sergeant who's asked me to do something. I don't want to do it. I think I'm better than it.
Right.
And I was like, nah, man, you're going to regret not having me, who's the fastest, the strongest, the best, and the brightest to be with you.
And you're like, I only have a little time left because I have AIDS.
Yeah. And, you know, like, yeah, another failure and then another failure and another failure. And, you know, like then seeing friends get hurt because of my mistakes. All of those things are writing on the wall to at what point are you going to stop being this ethnocentric prick?
Right.
And then the moment you start making these decisions that like the one that you made, it was a selfless decision. Like it was better for her.
Of course.
You know, like, maybe her next perfect guy is right around the corner and hooking up with you would infringe in that. Maybe the perfect woman for you is right around the corner and you're going to mess up that moment.
Maybe even though she was cool with it for the moment, she would have felt shitty because I don't want to be in a relationship and she's happy now, but then, you know, would be bummed out.
Yeah. And those are nuanced decisions with lots of little subtle influences. And I'm not on this high ground throwing rocks from my glass house. I just know that failing sucks.
Yeah.
Losing sucks.
Yep.
And when you said it, when you start making little wins and more wins and then bigger victories, and then at no point are there too many wins or there too many victories. Like my life is still getting radder.
Right.
You know,
I know.
It's like food is tasting better. Yeah. Sex is even more fantastic.
Yeah,
my night's sleep are even better. My role sessions, like this morning I had Victor Hugo, Felipe, Sean G, Sean Apperson, Tyson, like all the mat at
They're
one
all
time.
Killers.
Just killers.
Yeah.
And as a middle-aged man, I'm like out there hanging with world champions.
Yeah.
You know, Steve and Chris Hargett. And it's just like, this is awesome.
Dude, I'll tell you what my guillotine choke is like what I'm known for, because I'm a Marcelo Garcia guy, and every above my pay grade person that I've caught, UFC people, black belts, whatever, have been from that one move. When you tweaked mine, and I honestly didn't think, I was like, this is my thing, it can't get better. When you showed me the crunch you do for your arm in, I felt like I was going to throw up. It was the most violent thing I've ever felt in my life. Like, I can feel it when I describe it. To say, you are still getting better.
Yeah, still getting better.
And I think that's so...
And so is every element of my life.
Yeah.
My relationships as a father, as an entrepreneur.
You don't need to stop. I think people are so used to fucking just settling or trying to get by.
Have you ever heard the story of the Hellbound Train?
No.
By Alfred Hitchcock?
Uh-uh.
Beautiful Alfred Hitchcock. I know it's generationally dating me here. You know, he was an early horror writer, pre Stephen King.
Yep.
The Hellbound Train tells a story of the son of a train conductor who is kind of a vagabond. He's walking on the street, and the Hellbound Train is the train that takes you to hell.
Yeah.
And the Hellbound Train comes to him and says, "Hey, will you come?" The conductor steps off and he's like, "Hey, will you hop on board with me?" And he's like, "No, I want to make a deal. I want to be able to, yes, I'll get on your train, but I want to be able to stop time at any moment and live in that moment for eternity." And the devil's like, "You got a deal.
Yeah.
This is a great deal."
Sure.
For sure. So he hands him his conductor watch and he says, "You just turn it counterclockwise and it will freeze your life in that moment." And this guy, the train goes away with the devil on board conducting it. And this guy goes and lives his life. And he keeps on looking for this moment. And he keeps on finding a better day and a better day and a better day, you know, where he becomes rich and powerful. And he thinks that's his moment.
Sure.
He then has his family, you know, and then he cheats on his wife and he's rock bottom again. But he remembers what it was like. So then he starts fighting. And then he's 74. And, you know, his heart starts hurting. And he's like, I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed it so many times. Ugh. And now the train rolls up. He he could turn it counterclockwise and then live as a crippled old man with a broken heart and post divorce. And he was just waiting for that next perfect moment.
Right.
But he was missing the point the whole entire time was be living in the goodness and the beauty that is this life when you're making these small right decisions.
Yeah, man. I mean, gratitude is that, I think, is the, if I was to pick one thing where it's like, dude, how did you get so happy in the last couple of months? Like, dope shit's happened, but also really stressful stuff's happened.
Yeah.
And the happiness has kind of been consistent. And a lot of it is that gratitude and just being like, okay. So here's a question that I won't even pretend. This is clearly for me, is I still get from the affair and from my past when someone does bring that up.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about the story you were telling about your transition, right? Like all those rock bottoms and then just you're good. I still get
shame.
Yeah. And
guilt.
It's not as bad anymore. But what did you do when you're like proud of yourself and you're like, I'm becoming this man and I'm helping people and look at these friends and all this stuff I'm doing.
Oh, I still have waves of shame and guilt.
That's what I was going to say. And then it could be a random person on fucking Instagram comes forward and goes, isn't that the fucking dude who had a fucking affair? And you just go, oh, yep, I guess I'm fucking garbage. Like, what is that? And I mean, I think I know the answer, which is like, you just keep doing the good shit. And then you ignore that person and you forget about it in 2 seconds. But there are sometimes, man, where you just go, man, it's like people aren't rooting for you to get better.
They're not.
Right.
But they're not out of their own hurt. They're not out of their own failure. They're not out of their own suffering. And you responding or reacting to that is going to do nothing besides validate their pain and hurt where they are.
Ooh.
Like the other route, like you have a really clear option here. Like one is, you piece of shit adulterer,
right.
You know, that, you know, cheating it. You thought that you're the selfless person, but you're not the feminist protector that you thought that you were. Looks, got it. And you respond or, back to that, like finding the common ground, finding that thing, finding that moment, or just putting any form of love back towards that person.
Right.
And, you know, like, bro, you're so right. It's a shame that I will carry to the day that I die.
Yep.
I regret it in this moment that you brought it up and I'll regret it forever. Mm-hmm. And every time that I look at my girl, I'll remember it. But I'm going to try to do better.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can think back right now. I could name 5 different things that turn my stomach with shame.
Yeah.
That I'm so humiliated to have done to friends, backstabbing them, you know, and, who would we be without the contrast of those experiences?
And I think it's important for people to hear people like you say that, because there was even a part of me, or there was a part like just now, like I have your fucking book. I've heard you do. God, you must be relieved that this is the one podcast you're doing. That's not 5 hours with like Jocko or fucking Joe. But I know you've had dark shit, but even hearing you say that in such specific, relatable terms, like the stomach churn, which is like, oh, where you go, oh, okay, well, fucking Tim has that. I feel better. And someone's listening to this and they go, well, if Jamie has it, I feel better. And it's like, guys, we all have it.
Yeah, we all have it.
We all have it. And I think the problem is, and the people who are projecting and screaming online, they're the ones that don't want to think about it because they're using other people's celebrities. You know, my advice to celebrity section today was, it was just everybody gossiping about Olivia Wilde's divorce or just gossiping about other people. And I just realized, like, I don't want to talk about it. And I think this is actually more important, which is like, hey, this is how you become the kind of person that doesn't want to talk about celebrities' divorce.
Yeah.
You know, like confronting your own shit.
Yeah. But I mean, there's also nothing. I love history.
Yep.
And I also love looking out because I don't want to make the same mistakes that I see other people making.
Yes.
And not that I'm going to, you know, Yee goes online and says something hateful towards Jews. By no means are you going to go out and defend Yee about saying that.
I kind of did. Because I'm like, I'm Jewish, but I'm like, he's having a fucking mental breakdown. Like, it's like he's sick.
But
But yeah, it's very bad.
But that's exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yes, yes.
Like, you're supposed to look at it, yeah, and you're supposed to talk about it, and you're, yeah, supposed to internalize it a little bit and then work through it and then talk to somebody about it. And,
yeah,
be like,
dude,
man, that poor dude, like, yeah, somebody needs to step up and help. Where's his mat?
Right.
Where's his hug?
Yeah, dude.
You know, did he go to the gym today? Did he make his bed? Did he have a good breakfast? Did he make breakfast for his kids?
Yeah.
Did he do his wife right and give her, you know, like.
That's the thing. Like, that's what it. Cancel culture, quote unquote, should be. I saw so many people who I really respect just be like, he should never be allowed to speak and whatever. It's like, because who's helping this guy? Yeah. Like, it's so fucking sad where hold them accountable. That's not an okay thing to say. Everyone should be held accountable. The anti-cancel culture people, they're not saying don't hold people accountable. Well, some are lunatics, but like, hold people accountable and then go, how do I help this person?
Yeah.
Because helping this person, that's how you make the world a better place.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing that I wanted to talk to you about, I've had, so we have a segment, it's our AA segment where we have audience advice, and we're going to plug in the commercial because I want to have as much time with you as possible, but people can go to the Logcast app, send in their questions, we'll play it on the air. You're going to hear about that right now. Guys, this next segment is brought to you by Logcast. Here's the deal. Logcast gave me a read that I'm not going to read because this is actually a product that I will use and I want you guys to use too. Anyone who has followed me or has followed my Patreon knows I try to write updates, but I'm dyslexic and can barely read. Logcast is a social media platform that uses audio, which means the reason you guys like me, the reason you guys listen to me, that is how I can interact with you. Not only that, but our AA segment, our audience advice segment that you're about to hear, we're going to be able to actually bring your guys' voice into the podcast. If you have questions for me and you want to be featured on Advice Not Taken, which we want you to be featured, you can use Logcast, joining my circle, the Jamie Kilstein circle, for the podcast. Submit your questions there. We will play it on your show. You will be part of the show. You will be part of the community, and you will be supporting a great new innovative company that supports this show. So if you want to be part of this, go download the app Logcast. It is free. It costs you nothing. All you're doing is being more involved in this show, more involved in our community, and supporting a great new company. Be ahead of the curve. I'm never ahead. I joined Twitter like 10 years too late. Join this now. Logcast. You can get it on your app store, wherever you get apps. Logcast. I'll see you over there. Cool. But I wanted to ask you, this is another thing for me, but I've gotten a lot of messages from guys, a lot of guys on the left, a lot of guys who are kind of confused with where they are politically. So I'm going to kind of combine everyone's question into a question about me, which is with masculinity. So I didn't have a ton of masculine role models growing up and didn't do any of the manly things until I got really lucky that I found MMA in like 1999 because I worked at a video store, mm-hmm, and they had like the VHS old UFCs in like the porn room because it was still like, yeah, illegal. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Found Hoyce Gracie, found a straight blast gym. My first teacher was a blue belt. So like back in the day. And, you know, I had that, but I still, there was a lot of stuff I was confronting. And because I was codependent, I was always in a relationship and I was always whatever the girl wants. And I'm glad I have some of these feminine qualities. I can talk about my emotions, vulnerable. But then when I got into the very sort of woke left, masculinity was just seen as a bad word,
yeah,
like legitimately as a bad word. And I think that, you know, if you actually were to define toxic masculinity, it's just being a shithead.
Yeah.
I don't know if it, I actually think it's the opposite of masculinity.
It is the opposite.
Right? It's people, yeah, who are going to bully women, people who are going to bully, start fights, you know, all that posturing shit. But one of the things that's really helped me with my mental health is meeting guys like you, is holding myself accountable and kind of taking that, realizing that that term doesn't have to be bad. So the question is for people listening, which is for the guys, how do you define masculinity? When does it get toxic? You know, what's the problem for guys right now, and how can they be a better man without even me saying, how do you be a better man? The,
yeah,
old progressive in me is like, can I say that? But I think it's really important.
Yeah. I would define being a man, on a spectrum of what a male is capable of doing. You have one is a volume and a capacity to do good. And that comes with power, strength, money, clout. That's on this far end. Like if I'm going to measure my ability to do positive influence and good, the more money I have, the more good I can do. The more strength I have, the more I can help.
Yep.
The more I can lift the car off the woman, right? Yep. And then on the far end of the scale is uselessness.
Yeah.
And in this masculine scale, this uselessness, just because you are weak and you are powerless and you don't do violence doesn't mean that you're a good person.
Right.
It means that you're incapable of doing violence. A person that is capable of doing great violence but choosing to do good, that is a good person.
Right.
This is just a useless person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dangerous masculinity is down here.
Mm.
This is where somebody then has access to do damage, but they have no ability to be good.
Right.
Way over here with the power and the strength and the love and the kindness and the grace and,
yes,
and the unadulterated power that is beautiful and innate and wired in our DNA, where our bones are thicker, our muscles are stronger, where I can walk up and I can, you know, my son, one of the scariest moments of my life was just a couple of months ago. We're in Costa Rica.
Okay.
And surfing, scuba diving. My son's out in the water, and like I gave him some really clear guidelines of how far out he can go and how far up the beach he can be. And I turn, you know, it's the same story every single time. You turn your back for 1 second.
Right.
I turn my back for 1 second, and he has moved from the nice clear blue ocean, and he's in this white brown area. Oof. And he's being swept to sea. I sprint as fast as I can. I dive in the ocean. It takes me 10 minutes to get to him. We are a mile and a half out in the ocean now.
Whoa.
Still in a rip current.
Holy shit,
we
dude.
Fight for an hour and a half along the shore to get out of this rip current to then swim back our way back in. I'm throwing up on the ground. I can't walk the next day. I'm absolutely destroyed.
Wow.
That is the power and the ability to protect and preserve.
Yeah.
And that is the beautiful thing that is man when he is capable. Otherwise, that little boy would have drowned.
Yeah.
And he would have been washed out to sea and been food for crabs and sharks.
Yeah.
Like that is the beautiful thing that a man can do. He sprints and rescues and protects. Here's somebody in the church foyer saying something inappropriate and you confront them. That is goodness. That is kindness.
Yeah.
Over here.
And you have the confidence because of the work you do that like they're not going to start shit with you.
No.
Yeah.
No, and that starts with little decisions.
Yeah.
You know, you don't end up on the spectrum of being John Wayne, you know, of like, all right, well, I'm going to go and protect this community. Like you're not in the Magnificent Seven just automatically.
Right.
I love the Magnificent Seven because each one of those guys was broken.
Yeah.
But they were there to do good.
Yeah.
And they had made all of these mistakes and all of these failures, gambling, cowardice, backstabbing, but then they have the capability to do good and then ultimately they can be good.
Right.
That's the redemption story.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a big thing for people listening where it's like doing shit that makes you tough will make you better.
Yeah.
Like a better person because it's hard. Okay, so I feel like to be fair, I'll ask you the opposite for that. For a lot of the quote unquote like alpha dudes who, you know, maybe they just, yeah, they start jiu-jitsu because they fucking heard it on Rogan and they're like, that sounds fucking badass. Like I want to beat ass, like blah, blah, blah. Where does...
God, I hate alpha. I hate that word so much.
Yeah.
And I also hate like the stereotypical alpha.
Me too.
Yeah.
And so what is that balance where it's, so we told the
where
kind
is
of...
your grace?
Yes. We told
where is
the
your kindness?
Guys.
Where is your selflessness?
That's it.
So like you going and being a tough guy in the gym, that's not courage.
No.
You're 230 pounds with tattoos and a beard.
Yes.
You know, like being rad is going down to the homeless shelter and serving food on 6th Street.
Yep.
That's rad.
Yep.
You know, you being a 230 pound dude with a big Ford F-250 and finding a place to park downtown so you can spend the next 6 hours serving food to a bunch of blacks and gays.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Any other form, you're a coward.
Oh, and by the way, I'll even take that person in jiu-jitsu. For the jiu-jitsu people listening, that tough person in jiu-jitsu who like, maybe they're not going to hear this podcast and go feed the homeless right away, but it's not using your strength to massacre people. It's being the dude who's 200 pounds and fucking tough and can flow roll with anyone, who can spot the person who's having a bad day and after class, take them to the corner of the mats and be like, hey dude, are you good?
Yeah.
And then they're just like, oh, it was my first class and I was freaking out. And you're going to be the reason that person comes back because you were fucking cool to them. Like that stuff is important, and I think that shit is masculine too. Like it's
so masculine
shit, right?
It is so courageous.
All right, dude, well I could talk to you forever. I know you got to get out of here. What are we promoting?
We are promoting goodness,
yep,
kindness, grace, selflessness, courage,
yep,
and go out and do hard shit.
Yeah. And also buy Tim's book. The new podcast you're doing with two of my favorite fucking
people.
Yeah. I have to play catch up on it. Is it called About Violence?
That's it.
About Violence.
But even the name is so quick to like be dismissive and judge. We just had Tucker Max on. We talked about First Amendment.
Oh, I started listening to that. Yeah, you know, I was listening to that episode.
We talked about an apocalypse.
Yep.
What does it really look like to be part of a tribe and a community that all of the ways that I think it is really the more knowledge and the more power, the more history and the more understanding, the more grace, more kindness, the less violence you have.
Yes.
The more able for a violence of violence that you have, the less violence that there is.
Yep.
You know,
I'll also promote you guys. I know you're doing more virtual courses. I highly recommend Sheepdog Response. You can check out the virtual courses. There's stuff on situational awareness. It's all over the place. So there's really good starting points. Obviously, if you can take a course, take it. They sell out very, very, very fast. And then I am going to be at the Funny Bone in Syracuse Friday and Saturday. I'm going to be headlining Dallas Fort Worth at Hyenas November something. I think November 20th. You can get all my tour dates are jamiehilstein.com/tour. If you like this podcast, rate and review it on iTunes, Spotify. It's a new podcast, so we want to make a lot of fucking waves. You guys are the OGs who are listening to this. Tell a friend about it. Post a clip. Spread the word. That is more important than any money you can give. But if you do want to give money, you can also support my shit and get a bonus solo podcast at patreon.com/jamiehilstein. You can follow me on Twitter @jamiehilstein, on Instagram @thejamiehilstein. I now follow Tim, whose Instagram is
Tim Kennedy MMA.
Yes, and you've been tweeting more too, I've noticed.
I have been.
Yeah, yeah. It's been good though. It's been like nuanced. Like I love your Twitter. Yeah,
I'm trying. I am so sick of these two far extremes.
Yep.
So like I'm just like pushing buttons on both sides.
That's what I'm doing.
So too. I'm just like, beep, beep. Will you come here and talk to me? And they're like, beep. Will you come over here and talk to me?
Oh,
and occasionally they do.
The funniest is when you shit on one side and they come over and they go, yeah, and they like double down and you go, no.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, not that either, buddy. Yeah. And they're like, fuck. All right, well, I love you. Thank you so much for doing this. Bye.
Yep.